Scots only.
It, like, literally with only Scots on it.
No, that, but I thought so at first. So Scott is...
That's funny. I pressed record halfway through you saying that, and now I think that's funny enough to, like, repeat. So you've done one podcast before.
Yeah.
And it's called Scots Only.
Yeah.
And so, but you're saying it's not only for Scots.
No. But the two hosts were called Scott, right. Named Scott. And I thought it was really funny that my name was Scott. So I was like, why don't we do... Can I be on your podcast? And coincidentally, it's a New Zealand music sort of... based podcast,
right?
And so I asked them, and they're like, "Yeah, come on, it's a new one, but they're pretty cool."
Yeah,
he's a producer. I can't remember quite as I think it's Scott Bulls.
Okay,
his name. Yep. And he actually went to like SAE, and he does like he's done some production work and live stuff. And cool. The other guy, I'm not too sure. He wasn't actually at my podcast, so they're cool. They're cool dudes. Yep. Actually, funnily enough, they live about a kilometer up the road from here.
Those bastards!
I know
they're moving in on me.
They're invading.
I'm like, I've become the old dog with this now. We're actually coming up to 8 years with this podcast, which is ridiculous. When we started, there was like no one else doing it. And now everyone's got a podcast.
Yeah. It's quite fun to do podcasts.
I'm just worried about my levels now.
No, you're all good.
This is the thing. I have to be the host and also the engineer.
Yeah,
the absolutely. Tech.
Well, like you are an engineer.
Well, I'm not an engineer. I'm just like, you know. I'm just someone who does things and often has to push the buttons, you know?
Yeah.
It's like in the old days when the industry was different, we had people to do all the different jobs, but now we have to do all the jobs.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That's fair enough. Yeah. That's why I don't do any of it. I don't do any of that. I can't.
Really?
We don't.
But you're the new generation. Doesn't your generation learn how to do everything amazingly?
They do, but it's also a lot of hassle to do it yourself.
Yeah.
If you record yourself, it's a really easy way to start band arguments, for sure. We're only a 2-piece, so we're lucky, but working with a producer really helps with the, butters it up.
So when things come up that are maybe a controversial decision, it's not neither of your guys' fault, it's the other guy's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so it's like a professional passing the buck.
Yeah, kind of. He walks you through the problems.
Right.
He helps you out. You know. Scott Seabright's an mate who's coincidentally like another Scott.
Scott
Seabright's our producer, and he handholds us a little bit when we have to make decisions, but great producer, and it means that I don't have to worry about mixing anything or recording anything.
I liked it when I saw his name on your stuff, because I liked your stuff, and he's currently mixing our new record.
Oh, cool.
So it was like, oh, good. Because when I first heard your stuff, I was like, oh, this sounds awesome. I wonder who made it. And then
sure enough,
it's the guy we're working with. I mean, we produced it ourselves, but he's mixing it at the moment.
Yeah, so, he's a great, like, I recorded his place. Mm. I saw that you were there the other day.
Yeah, we're often there.
Yeah, yeah. We kind of pissed him a bit. I was like, oh, have you got any space? He's like, oh, I tell you what, I got one date in November that you guys can record on. I was like, okay, so we're going in on Monday to finish off our EP.
That's the thing about busy. I mean, good people, they're busy, right?
Busy, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I've got this, and then I'm busy until like May next year.
Right.
I'm like, sweet. Cool.
I know, because half of the stuff that we're booking in for mixing and things, it's like 2-3 months out, you know?
Yeah.
So our thing has gone in to be mixed this week that's just finished. We just sent it off. And I think we had to book it in like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, it's worth it because then you get the results.
Yeah, that's the thing. I reckon like my biggest thing I always get, one question that always pops up with my band is because we've been on The Rock and some other, we've had some really good, like super, super grateful for the success we've had.
Yeah.
Success, if you know what I mean. Like,
that success.
Yeah.
Lots of different types of success, but that counts.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a milestone to achieve that a lot of bands want to achieve. We were lucky enough to be one of the bands that have got both our songs that we've released on The Rock and in like a solid rotation.
Yeah.
And
so you got 100% success rate so far.
Yes.
So it's only down from here.
Only down, yeah, honestly. When you get one song on the radio and then you're like, will my second song get on the radio?
Yeah.
I lost about 50% of my hairline stressing over that one.
For most people, the answer is no.
Yeah.
But you got the second one on.
Super lucky, yeah. One of the biggest pieces of advice I give is you have to, I think it's a really good idea to work with a producer, someone who's got like a really good resume. Scott's done an awesome job with heaps of bands. You had Lorenzo on from Silco.
Yes, that's right.
And he works a lot with Scott's actually, Lorenzo's the reason we work with Scott is because Scott hit us up after Lorenzo told him about us.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys are pretty new on the scene.
Yeah, we've been a band. Yeah.
I'm trying to pick how what your ages must be. Like,
I look probably the youngest. Brandon's got this big fat porno stash that he wears on his upper lip.
I did notice that.
Yeah,
I was like, okay,
it's unmissable.
That guy's got something to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Come up with some cool names for it, like the womb broom and stuff. And some even worse ones. But yeah, he has this big mo. I try growing a mo, but I look prepubescent.
I always think about the different generations and the experiences they've had. I mean, my generation was kind of an interesting one because the industry was in its old version when we were kids, and then we kind of straddled everything changing, you know? Yeah. Like, I was in my late teens when Napster happened and, you know, that sort of stuff. So we saw the internet arrive and change everything, and, you know, but you guys, of course, have come up sort of since that's happened.
Yeah.
And actually, the weird question that came into my mind was the sequence. I figure like every young person must have a sequence of toys that they've been into, right? So yeah. I'll tell you my sequence, and I'll get your sequence. Yeah, so my sequence, like from about the age of six, went He-Man, Masters of the Universe. Then I went G.I. Joe, Matchbox Cars. Then I got into skateboarding, which was, you know, I was growing up a bit.
Yeah.
I think for a minute I was into like hiking and stuff, and then I found the guitar.
Yeah.
And it just occurred to me this morning, you probably don't have the same sequence, right?
Probably not. Oh, by the way, I'm 24 and Brandon's 22.
Okay, right. Yeah. Yeah, just so we get that. I wasn't sure if you were avoiding that.
No. I actually didn't even start doing any. I'll get into that after. Right. My what did you call it? The sequence of toys. Yes. Yeah. So the sequence of toys. It would have been like, day one, probably just like, I remember playing video games a lot as a kid, right? Yeah. Everyone, but
everyone except for me. Somehow I never got into them.
You had He-Man.
Yeah, I had He-Man. Yeah, exactly.
So probably like video games was like a big part. But then if we're talking toys, man, like Transformers, especially around when the
Michael Hill Jeweler. Yeah. He started making Transformers.
30 carat Optimus Prime.
Oh yeah, the Michael Bay movies, right? They would have brought it back to life because Transformers were big when I was a kid, and I actually always liked them. But we, you know, a lot of the toys you get into are just what you can afford.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and I couldn't afford them.
Yeah,
so
Transformers toys were my. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, of course.
They were the shit for me. I loved it. Yeah. And Lego was a big part. Like,
oh, forgot to say that
Star Wars Lego was. I still have Star Wars Lego. Right. I have a big, like, limited edition 10-4. It's like the first spaceship you see in episode 4.
Yep.
Sitting under my TV.
Right.
Very proud of it.
Yep.
I got it in COVID.
Lego is a pretty amazing toy.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's a great time. And then when I was, I used to be really outdoorsy growing up. I was always on the trampoline or like fishing.
Yeah.
Used to go eeling a lot and do all that sort of out. Like we live in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, did you grow up there as well?
Yeah. I spent my whole life in Ifedu.
Yeah.
And so did Brandon pretty much. Mm-hmm. So we're out in the Wops. We often get referred to as hillbillies and like six fingers and marrying our cousins.
Really?
which a lot of the time is kind of true out there, yeah.
Well, I'm learning things today.
Yeah.
I was taking notes.
And anyway, so we grew up like really rural, growing up on farms and biking and like all that stuff, going to the beach a lot. And what else? I guess when I got to 10, I got an acoustic guitar. My brother played guitar, but no one asked my family's musical at all.
Yeah.
So my brother Matthew, he's in another band called Tough Tiger Fist. They're a comedy duo.
Great band name.
Yeah, they actually got nominated for the Billy T. So super,
oh, cool.
Super stoked for him.
Yeah, sweet.
Matthew's a few years older than me, 4 years older, or 4 years older. And he played guitar, and I guess that might have got me interested. I think I always might have had an interest in music, like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yep.
Growing up was a big thing.
But that's another example of generational, because the Chili's have had like several chapters to their career.
Yeah.
And when someone says the Chili's, because I'm a massive Chili's fan, but I'm a fan of like the 90s Chili's.
Yeah.
Mother's Milk, Blood Sugar, One Hot Minute. The 80s stuff is amazing, but I just never got exposed to it.
Yeah.
And then when they got into like Californication, I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but you're probably like the next chapter, right?
My favorite CD as a kid was I really liked it was just the compilation album, but it had a picture of, it had like the lips on the front, the greatest hits
the cover. I think I remember that.
I just owned that. So I kind of had a good mix.
Yeah, right. Across the board.
I remember when Danny California, Stadium Arcadium, came out. Yeah. I actually remember that because I used to fall asleep to the radio and they're like, and this is a brand new tune, first time being played. New Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I remember being like so excited.
Yeah.
And that was a great album. I love that album.
Well, I'm now starting to appreciate the later stuff more.
Yeah.
I've been getting more into them actually recently with a bunch of like Drumeo, the video, the drumming channel on YouTube, man. has a whole bunch of stuff. Like Chad Smith been on there recently.
Doing 30 Seconds to Mars and stuff.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love that.
Did you watch that clip?
I watch heaps of Drumeo. Yeah, I don't actually play drums that much. I used to, but yeah. I love drumming videos.
That whole idea of these guys not knowing the song and just trying to play it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even hesitate. He doesn't even listen to it. Yeah, he just starts.
He nailed it too.
And then they go, "Do you want to do it again?" He goes, "Nope, I nailed it." Brilliant.
That's cool.
So that, and I'm also a big fan of Rick Rubin. So
Rick Rubin's cool.
So it's been bringing me back to the Chilli world.
Fair enough.
Which is cool.
Rick Rubin's a weird one because he's like not actually like he's a music producer that's not, he doesn't play in anything. He just does it by, he's not classically trained or anything. He just does it by ear. Right?
He also doesn't know anything about engineering.
And he just makes like the best albums.
Yeah. And I think that there's actually something in that because he's never distracted by that's a major seven chord or something about the hertz or something. You know, he's never distracted by that. He's literally just listening.
Yeah.
He's sort of putting himself in the audience position.
I remember him saying something in an interview where his grandma used to just take, he used to go to shows all the time. And he lived at his grandma's and she would take him to shows like all the time or something. Pretty cool.
There's a lot to be said about exposure to music, right? And immersion. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said about practicing your instrument too.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not the whole thing. You know, I think it's about like active listening and just being into a wide variety. And it sounds, I mean, Rick Rubin's career is astonishing. I mean, his work in rock is one thing, but then his work in hip hop is another thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
He's all over the map.
Outrageous.
Yeah. So you started playing at 10, which is a relatively young age to play guitar. It's kind of an ideal age to start playing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, 10, I guess, I grew up with quite a big family.
Yeah.
So me and my three brothers and my parents, so six of us in a house. And
the both brothers are older?
Three brothers, sorry.
I got three brothers, right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They're all older. So right. Chris is my oldest brother. He's 10 years older than me. And then Aaron's 8. And then Matthew's 4. And then it's me. So I was kind of just like, I was a happy accident.
Right.
I'm a blessing.
They were all done. And then it's like, whoop, there's one more. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So does only one other brother play good music? Or?
Yeah, Aaron plays a little bit of guitar. But he kind of got bored of it because of his guitar teacher. I think that's a big part of teaching music because I also teach my younger cousin.
Yeah.
So shout out to Malcolm if he's listening because he probably is. I teach him guitar and he's doing really well.
Cool.
But you have to be engaging with them, eh?
Absolutely.
Like my brother didn't want to play guitar because his guitar teacher wouldn't stop trying to teach him songs like Jeremiah the Bullfrog, which he wasn't interested in.
Why that song?
Because she's just this old hippie. It's besides the point. But like, I'm teaching my cousin Black by Pearl Jam.
Oh yeah,
for
nice.
Example,
yeah.
Like very easy song, kind of like he's been practicing the chords. He's doing super well, so it's really easy to teach.
And that one's all about the strum pattern, isn't it? Because the chords aren't that hard, but the strum pattern, to really get it to sound right, you've got to have the right technique on the right hand.
Yeah, it's a really easy thing. You're kind of just teaching him how to like when to strum with whole notes, and if then we'll like take it to quarter notes, and then we'll do the
brilliant
changing the structure.
I love that approach.
Yeah.
Like sort of strip it out and start with the structure and then start to fill it in as you layer up.
Yeah. And he also thinks I'm the man because I'm in my band. He like cranks my band. So.
You got street cred with him.
Yeah. He thinks it would be like the equivalent of me being taught by Kurt Cobain or something.
Right, right. But you're right though. A tutor can make a big difference to someone's experience.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've met a lot of people over the years who have walked away from music or whatever. I remember meeting this guy who had a bad experience with a tutor. Like he's probably mid-60s or even close to 70 now.
Yeah.
And when he was a kid, he had a terrible run-in with a music tutor. Someone said, "You don't have talent, you can't do it." And so he didn't play for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And then he started guitar lessons close to retirement age and is absolutely in love with it.
Yeah.
And he's like kicking himself that he didn't learn to play earlier. But this one dick person in the past just... You know,
I had an experience like that. Eh? Yeah. One of my I learned guitar through an amazing teacher named Renelle. Her name was Renelle Morgan. I haven't talked to she was my only guitar teacher really, and she taught me when I was in primary school. And then from high school, I kind of just figured it out by myself with like the help of people older who just were better and stuff.
Yeah.
And but one thing I was always wanted to get into in high school was vocals because I didn't know how singing worked.
Right.
I couldn't even figure out that vocals was a thing where you have to sing note. Like I just didn't get it at all.
No concept of it.
Yeah. Like I was always just playing guitar and I just couldn't figure out vocals. And then I started starting to figure it out. So I got vocal lessons, and I went through one person who I won't say, and they literally told me to quit doing vocals.
What? Really?
Yeah, yeah. They were just like, they were this classically trained jazz singer, right. So not even like remotely what I was kind of wanting to sing anyway. But
yeah.
They were just like, yeah, you should probably think about whether or not you want to actually do vocals or not. And I was like, damn, I would have been 15. I didn't quit though. It actually made me want to work harder.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's one of the things that stood out to me about you guys' recordings. It's like, these are great vocals.
Thank you.
I mean, with a lot of the time with rock bands, I have a love-hate relationship with rock bands. I mean, I come from the world of rock. You know, the stuff we're doing at the moment is more on the rocky side and stuff. But I also get so bored with rock.
Yeah.
You know, so many bands repeat the same ideas. And so often, good melodies and good vocals seem to be sort of traded off for big riffs and big this and that and whatever. And when I heard your guys' stuff, I'm like, man, these are great songs.
Thank you.
Great vocals. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I was, like, keen to have you on.
Thank you.
Isn't that such an amazing contradiction to that experience when you're 15?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, a lot of work gets done in the studio.
Probably. Oh, yeah, of course.
Like everyone does. I'll record the same line. I think Scott gets me to record the same line 6 times, and he'll find the best takes. And
that's
everything,
nothing.
Which is fine, right?
That's nothing.
And so, I mean, I usually blow my voice live, to be honest. I've got an ear monitors to try and combat that, because usually I'm just overcompensating with my vocals. But I'm not as good as, like, Lorenzo is one of the best singers I've ever seen.
Right, yeah.
Lorenzo Hazelwood is a freak.
He's also a good singer, yeah.
He's an amazing singer.
But, I mean, like, for example, I was in the studio once quite a few years back, and I was trying to... I'd written the song without really thinking that much about whether it was the right range for my voice.
Yeah.
And it was a bit too high for me. And I had to get up to the... But we're like fully into it because the band had already done their bits.
Everything. And then you have to... Yeah,
and
I
I'm
know.
Like, oh, shit. I should have done it a tone lower. And I had to get up to this note and I just couldn't get there. And I think I did like 7 goes or something and I just couldn't hit it.
Yeah.
And then I said to the guy, to the engineer, man, you must think I'm an idiot. You know, I can't hit I can't hit the note that I wrote, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes, don't worry, man. There was such and such in here last week. And he named a very, very well-known band at the time who were also very well-known for like layers of great vocals.
Yeah.
And he said, we worked on one line with one of them and we did 137 takes.
Oof.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. I mean, doing vocal, like when you're singing, when you do a day of vocals, your voice starts to get worn out. And because like in Black Taxi, I have this really intense, that was like the...
Yeah, your voice breaks up in that.
Yeah. It's like the hardest song to sing.
Yeah, but it's fucking cool.
It's super cool. It's probably my best vocal performance. It did take a lot, but like at the end, I have this really, really screamy part, which is like, I like to think it's maybe... I sound like me when I do the screamy parts, right? Because like I feel like I've got a really cool way of doing it, whatever.
Yeah.
And so that sounded like so shit, but whatever.
No, you know what just happened then?
What?
That was an interesting little experiment. You didn't talk arrogantly, you talked confidently about something you've worked hard on, and then you paused and the Kiwi self-deprecation kicked in and you tried very quickly to undo it. And I say, fuck that. Own what you've got because you're fucking good at it.
I'm the best vocalist.
There you go.
Nah, I'm not. But I'm really happy with how my vocals sound. They're a part that I'm really confident about.
Yeah.
With the like screamy vocals. And I was like, Scott, we have to record this last because I will destroy my voice.
Yes.
Like,
makes sense.
Destroy it.
You want to blow it out?
I did blow it out.
Yeah.
And he made me do it like 11 times for like the 2 songs we were recording.
Yeah.
And it's
just
like, yeah.
And you're in the middle of that and you're thinking, oh my God, I can't take it anymore. But then you've got to try and coach your mind and go, but it's going to be worth it. Like the results, like this is going to be a hard day, but then it's done and then I can just enjoy the fact that it happened.
I couldn't live with disappointing Scott like that. I would, he's really good at helping me like confidently hit those high notes and stuff. Like,
right.
He's like, oh man, it's only like this note. It's only a semitone higher. And he's like really good at kind of encouraging. He's a really encouraging, but he's also... He also wants you to work hard. Mm-hmm. He's just an amazing producer.
Absolutely.
Right? All
no,
the time
he's a full, he's a complete pro.
For sure.
Hitting those sort of notes like that, it's really almost completely about confidence, isn't it?
It's about confidence, yeah, for sure. And just like, I think a lot, there's like a theory that I heard somewhere. It was probably like some old YouTube channel, like The Acts of Creation or something. He's like, you know, when you're performing, you don't want to perform at 110%. Like stress, you want to play at 70% because if you're like a lot more relaxed, usually it comes off better. And sometimes you're thinking like, I need to hit this note and it's too semitones out of my range at the moment, what I can hit. Yeah. It's like, how am I going to do this? And you just need to like stop and like just ground yourself a little bit and then just be like, okay, I'm just going to hit that note. But from like the mindset of, I'm only going to do it at 70%.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
I actually talk about that theory all the time.
That's a great theory, right?
I mean, yeah, because it's true for just playing as well as singing. I mean, if you're playing on the edge of your ability, it's only a matter of moments before you fall off, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But you do want to have a level of ease in your playing. And I've made that mistake so many times over the years of like, oh, I've got this idea, I wonder if I can do it. And then going for it and then like, nope, couldn't do it. You know? Yeah. And then you got to remember, like, this performance is for them, not for me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've got to bring, you know, the place where I'm comfortable. So I think the right way of looking at it is that last 30% is for your practice time.
Yeah.
And if you want to get that 100% level on stage, then you have to raise your game to 130%.
Yeah.
You have to keep pushing it up. You
absolutely.
Know? And so that, I totally agree with that.
That's good. That's a good theory, right?
Like, absolutely.
There's heaps of ways you can do it. And sort of like making things more difficult for yourself when you're practicing is a really good way. Like one thing I do is I play bass in the band, right? But I'm actually a guitar player. But what I do is, if I had a performance back in the day, because I was really into metal, I used to be like really into death metal. So for my NCA level performances, I would do like, I did like an Infant Annihilator song, which is like this hard out extreme death metal band that I really wanted to do because I was a super edgy teenager. And I used to practice it on an acoustic nylon string because like the fat neck and like you're fighting against it. And then when you play it on an electric, it's like, nothing.
Yeah.
It's like playing butter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no. Like, one of my tricks is similar to that. When I'm practicing something and let's say I find the reach really difficult.
Yeah.
If I'm struggling to reach up with my little finger to the 7th fret, let's say.
Yeah.
Then I go, okay, I'm gonna change it and I'm going to reach for the 8th fret. And I practice it that way and then I go back to the 7th fret.
That's a good idea.
And and one, it changes your mentality on it.
Yeah.
But also, by reaching further, it sort of corrects your technique a bit.
Yeah.
Because it sort of forces you to put your arm and wrist in a better place, you know? So by the time you get back to the 7th fret, it's like, oh, thank God for that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, speaking of hitting the high notes, I also had a vocal teacher years ago who told me, when you're going for a very high note, don't sing up to the note.
Sing down to it?
Sing down to it.
Yeah.
Sing over it and down to it.
Oh, true. Yeah. I've never been able to do that. I must have interpreted it wrong. I did hear that theory a couple weeks ago and I was like, cool, that's great to know. But I think it was just like, I was trying to approach it and I didn't understand. But if you're singing above it and then go down to it, that makes a lot more sense.
It's the idea that if you're singing up to the note, then you're straining up to it.
Yeah.
And you may or may not reach it and you're very likely going to hit flat.
Yeah.
But if you sing, like, you sort of aim beyond it and then come back down on it, then you tend to sort of relax onto the note and you land it with, I guess, more confidence, but you're also more likely to hit it accurately.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's partly psychological, but I think it's also partly just a physical technique.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah. It's probably something I got to use in the studio for next. I mean, the next song I'm recording isn't too bad vocally. Fingers crossed I don't have to do it. Hopefully Scott's like, yeah, you got to sing another octave higher, baby.
The other one that I remember, I think my first vocal teacher taught me, is if you're going for a high note, not a ho note, whatever that is, if you're going for a high note, raise your eyebrows.
Really?
For some reason, I don't know, maybe this is again another psychological trick, but I've done that for years, raise my eyebrows.
Yeah, I'm going to do that now.
It makes some great stage faces.
Yeah, honestly, you know when you get ugly stage photos and you're just doing the stage faces the whole time?
I see it as like validation.
Yeah,
thank you. You're really playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in terms of like influences, I mean, rock and roll has been in a really funny place for a long time now. It's like obviously fallen out of the top slot in terms of popular music.
Yeah.
A lot of young people I talk to are influenced by bands from generations ago.
Yeah.
Do you have big influences or do you not sort of think like that?
Yeah. So like, I'll speak on behalf of me and Brandon. Brandon's like a really good drummer. He's got a lot of finesse and he's got a lot of attention to detail.
Yeah.
Just, he's a really solid drummer. I really love writing songs with him. Yeah. He's influenced by like, he's like a mix between sort of like a Dave Grohl sort of style and a Taylor Hawkins style. So,
right.
Which is very close to home to me because I'm super influenced by Nirvana.
Yeah.
And he's also super influenced by Green Day.
Right.
My influence is like Nirvana is probably the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
Royal Blood, because we're a two-piece, is a massive one. Yeah. I don't think we sound like royal blood, but like we don't sound exactly like royal blood.
Yeah.
But, oh, there's definitely influence, right? You can't really get away from it.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think I get a lot of influence from a lot of different areas. Like I really like metal a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of our songs are super metal sounding, but
no.
Into metal. I love Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
He's a massive influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess I just pull heaps of things from different areas.
Right.
Because
talking about Grohl and Hawkins and those sorts of players, to me, they're very kind of, I mean, I'm going to get assassinated for saying this, but they're kind of like very one-dimensional players in a way.
Yeah.
And Nirvana, obviously, a great band, but, you know, they kind of didn't have time to burn out in a way, you know, so we don't really know.
Which is probably a key to a lot of their, like, ongoing success. Yeah,
exactly. But when I heard you guys, I was thinking more like Soundgarden and
really?
Stone Temple Pilots, because I think of those bands as being more sophisticated in their songwriting.
True.
Rather than just like, rah, 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 you know, like you guys have really interesting little turns in terms of, you know, dropping a bar and going straight into this bit or going to a surprising chord. That's not an obvious choice and things like that, which is something I'm more used to hearing from what I think of being the more songwriter heavy bands, if that makes sense.
I reckon that's probably, I mean, I don't really listen to a lot of I listen to a lot of Alice in Chains.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's probably a big one, but mm-hmm. I'd say that most of my influence would be like, I really like the not that there is really obscure Nirvana songs, but like In Utero and Incesticide and Bleach. And I, like Nevermind as well, but heaps of songs like Milk It's one of my favorite songs off In Utero. And that's a really weird song that they don't play on the radio. And like most Nirvana songs, like, like, you know what I mean? But getting away from Nirvana, I also like heaps of other stuff. Like Red Hot Chili Peppers influenced one of our songs. I'm not even like a massive Red Hot Chili Peppers fan, but I appreciate the that might be a lot of probably like working on the song with people like Scott, who's like, we give him a song and then he'll write some notes about it and then we'll work on it. But maybe we have come up with stuff, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, does he actually get involved in the writing a little bit?
Not really too much. What we'll do is... This sounds bad. Keep listening. What we'll do is...
Let me finish again.
We record demos and we've been playing songs for ages. Like, we didn't change anything with Black Taxi, really. Yep. Yep. We just shortened the bridge.
Right.
And with our song Alone... Nothing changed except for the like cutting everything out and saying I'm alone.
Right.
And,
okay.
That was it. And like just things that I've like picked up writing from actually working with Scott has also rubbed off on me.
Yeah.
So I probably write songs with him in mind a lot of the time. Like I'm going to take this to Scott and he's going to say this is repetitive. So I need to do this.
I get that completely. I get that also with the musicians I work with.
Yeah.
Really good musicians. And when you work with them long enough, you start to get a feel for what they're going to respond to.
Yeah.
Or what they're going to like.
Yeah.
And then it starts to inform you on your, like, you know, you might be working, you might be laboring over an average idea. And you're like, eh, nah.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that.
You can kind of hear them going, eh.
Yeah, yeah, right. They're like,
they're too polite to say you're bullshit, but they'll just go, meh.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Like, usually, what I'll do when I'm recording a song, when I'm organizing to record a song, I will send maybe three to Scott, and he'll be like, yeah, this is the one that you want to do because this is the most well rounded, but you need to write a bridge for it. And so, me and Brandon got together for the song we're recording on Monday, and we're like, we need to write a bridge, and we wrote one, and the song's 100 times better.
Right.
And we wanted to keep in mind some ideas, like let's make it real, let's do something that we haven't done before, let's do a call and receive in the bridge, because I'm very self-conscious we're self-conscious of making our song sound super repetitive. I really don't want that to happen, especially in the long term. So just keeping ideas like a call and callback sort of thing.
When you say you don't want them to sound repetitive, do you mean the actual song itself, or do you not want song to song to sound repetitive?
Yeah, song to song to sound repetitive.
Right.
And the song itself to sound. I mean, I like to have people identify our song, but I don't want like three alones, you know?
Right.
Black Taxi and Alone are super different.
Yeah.
And so But I don't want that to be like a thing where people are like, your songs all sound the same.
I describe that as bands painting themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
You know, where there are artists out there who have constantly kept surprising and changing and experimenting and stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't really mind what they do after a while because you're so used to them constantly changing.
Yeah.
But then there are bands who really do have a like one sound. This is the thing they do.
Yeah.
And if they ever try to do anything else, you're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, right?
And now they're still like, now they're much older and they're still having to go, oh, for God's sake, here are some more power chords, you know.
Yeah, yeah, there's always feedback that you can like a criticism for being a two piece is that you can't make things dynamic,
right?
So me and Brandon went and wrote this really like I don't even know what the technical term for it is, but just making the songs more melodic.
Yep.
With the actual instruments.
Yeah,
which is really hard to do as a two piece, and it's really hard to do when you're playing a bass,
right?
Because I play bass, Brandon plays drums, and I sing, and that's
where did the guitars come from?
I have a pedal board that generates, that has a pog on it.
Okay, right.
And just so a whole heap of other stuff.
But on the records, are you actually overdubbing actual guitars?
No, that's all bass. All of it is...
Really?
Yeah, all of it's live.
That's amazing.
It's cool, though.
That sounds legit like guitars.
Thank you, yeah. It sounds real weird. What I like to think of it, my theory is I got this from an old buddy of mine, Liam Clark, his dad.
Yeah.
So Liam and I used to be in a band, and that was where the two-piece thing originated. And I used to be so feral towards bass players. Nah, I mean, I didn't really understand why it was important,
right,
until I met my mate Liam's dad, who was a bass player.
Mm.
And he's a real cool dude, and we'd jam, and I'd play guitar, and Liam would play drums, and his dad would play bass or something. And we would write songs together because we were doing Smoke Free.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about bass, and I never really appreciated it until I got it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess it's just everything a 14-year-old does when they play guitar is they don't really care about bass. But ever since then, I've always played bass because I love playing
Interesting.
Bass. Yeah, and yeah. I actually probably would rather play bass than guitar in a band.
So when you're in the studio, do you have it set up so that it splits to do two different amps?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it sort of ends up being
the guitar
amp and the bass amp.
Yeah, so that's how we do it live, is that I have two amps.
Right.
I have a guitar and a bass amp. Yeah, and so...
And how do you split it? Like, you say you've got the POG, but...
Yeah, the POG has a dry and affected output.
Of course it does. I've got one right behind me. On
yeah. So the affected output goes through like a noise gate and into a LS2? LS3, the Boss line selector pedal.
Oh, yeah.
And then that goes into... That has a whole bunch of effects that I can turn it on and off with. And then the bass goes into a Sans amp. I think the Sans amp's what's changed my mind on bass.
Right.
Sans amp is... my favorite pedal of all time.
Right.
The okay. The bass driver DI.
But what are you, how are you getting, what pedals are you using to get that guitar?
Just the sound? POG goes up, affected loop goes into a guitar amp, and then the dry output goes into the Sans amp, and that goes into my bass.
But what are you using to gain up the guitar though? Like, you must have a distortion pedal or something.
Right? No, I just run the guitar channel on distortion.
Right. Okay.
The guitar amp.
It's a built in.
Yeah, yeah, I just use a Boss Katana.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, right. I've heard
sorry.
Lots. I've heard lots of people raving about that amp.
Yeah, I mean, they're affordable and I'm super skint, so. Like, all our gear is, like, really cheap gear. Except Brandon's got nice gear, but...
But people have been raving about that amp. I mean, like, I've heard of some bigger touring artists who have been choosing to use that amp.
Yeah.
Which is surprising, because it's a solid-state amp, right? No tubes in it.
It is solid-state. Sorry if I, like, that question went right over my head.
No,
before.
No, that's all right.
one amp I do really want to try, shout out to John from Pink Plates. We did a show, and he let me use his amp because we're doing, like, a five-band show for this thing called Dougfest,
right?
In Hamilton.
Dougfest.
Yeah, he's our mate Doug, put together this festival, sold out. It was fucking
there's
sick.
A theme with you guys, you know, you're on a Scots only podcast and Doug playing at Dougfest.
Yeah. So John let me use his PV. Oh god, I'm gonna get assassinated for getting who does it. The 5150.
An amp?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh, I can't remember. I think it's a P. I think so. Hopefully.
Shall I Google it?
Yeah, Google it real quick because I don't want to get slaughtered, eh?
Well, I'm going to leave this bit in though.
Oh yeah, no, that's all right.
But, amp, 5150, did you say?
Yeah. This is a EVH.
EVH, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, so it's one of them. And it's super sick, man. That amp sounded amazing. It sounded way better than my Katana. And so now I want to get one of them when I can afford one.
Cool. Hey parents, it's hard to raise a family and keep costs low, especially during this cost of living crisis. If you're looking for a way to save on your kids' clothes and toys, look no further. Replay Thrifts for Kids is here to help.
They sell quality secondhand branded kids' clothes and Montessori-inspired toys. Not only is it great for the wallet, but it's better for the environment too. Check them out at www.replaythrifts.co.nz and give them a follow on Instagram at replay_thrifts.
Are you much of a gearhead?
I used to be such a massive gear snob.
Yeah.
As I got older and poorer.
You got poorer?
Yeah, man. Hell yeah. I was living at home and had just spent all my money on guitars because I didn't really need a gear. But now that we're in a living crisis, and I'm just, using my cheap bass and all my pedals except for the Sans Amp and the Pog, which I bought when I was living at home.
Yeah.
I set myself up at least, you know.
One of the things that we often talk about on this podcast is the sort of state of the industry and, you know, where anyone's trying to make money and if anyone can make money and all that kind of stuff. But recently it's been just hard for anyone anywhere to make money or anyone to ever get ahead. So what's it like being, you know, early 20s trying to get started in the world when the, you know, cost of living crisis is going bananas and so on?
I mean, it's pretty crap. I'm an upskilled worker, so I'm a tradie.
Right.
And so I'm fully qualified in my trade, but I still don't really make a whole lot of money to live off.
Right.
Yeah. With the cost of fuel and the cost of food.
Yep.
And the cost of trying to get a band functioning.
Yep.
Usually,
plus recordings and all the whole thing.
What I do to achieve what I want to achieve is I play heaps of gigs. We played 40 gigs in our first year as a band.
Yeah.
And then we decided to design shirts. I paid an artist to design our logo for a loan, and then I was like, this is sick, because it's a lighthouse. We live in Ifedu. Ifedu has a really famous lighthouse. And so he did this artwork, and then I was like, cool, this would look sick on a t-shirt.
Mm.
And we sold 100 t-shirts now. Wow. So what I'll do is I'll be like, hey guys, we're going to the studio soon. If you guys want to support us, we're selling some t-shirts. Yeah. We'd love to sell them.
That's really cool. It's a really kind of honest way of doing it.
Yeah. And people were like, yeah, love to see you guys record more music and support you. I'll buy a t-shirt. I sold 35 t-shirts last week. It was sick.
Fantastic.
It was fantastic.
What do you think about though? What are they called, where you ask people to donate for your upcoming album recording project?
I think it's fine. I think people are gonna it's like, don't be sad if no one supports you, you know. You're kind of asking people, it's like, it's fine, but will it pay off? I don't know. Recording can be really expensive. So what I do is I just do the t-shirts things and put together the money that I make from gigs, and then that goes into a band account that we don't touch, and then that pays for recording. But
I'm so torn on the subject, because I really like what you're describing, because you're giving them value right out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the t-shirts are worth, they walk away with the t-shirt, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, they walk away with the feeling that we've also supported these guys who have these plans, and they can take the profit and put it towards that and whatever, right? The idea of hey, I'm making a single, can you all give me money?
Yeah.
To me, it's I don't know. That's just
GoFundMe sort of thing.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's fine. I just think it's not going to work out, and that's going to be your what your result is usually an indication that people it kind of feels a bit weird.
It feels a bit biggery to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think one
and I
really
guess there's nothing wrong with that, but it just feels weird to me.
Yeah, it can feel weird, but there's heaps of ways to do it. One really cool way I like it is people do fundraising shows where they're like, hey, we want to record an album, we're going to do the show, we want as many people to turn up, if you support us, come to the show.
But that's different, because that's again giving them value.
Yeah, exactly.
Right away.
Yeah. Maybe I don't like the idea of I just won't knock anyone for doing it, but I also don't think they're going to get the results they want.
No, and that's a good point actually, because I'm not knocking anyone for doing it, because I think the whole music industry now is scrambling.
Yeah.
You know, so people are trying things and no one really knows what the answer is. So I'm definitely not throwing any darkness to anybody. But there's just something about when it crosses that line into you know, sort of the equivalence of standing on the side of the street with a cardboard sign saying,
start an OnlyFans account, eh?
Even that would be given them more value. Yeah.
I don't know. I think you kind of need to give the if they're supporting you, you kind of need to give them something. So, maybe. But I mean, unless you do like a Patreon thing where you're like, yeah, we'll put you on the album art. We're going to do an album.
Right.
The art cover is just going to be everyone who supported us. That could be a way of doing it. Maybe. I don't know.
I also have a very brutal opinion that I don't talk about very much.
No, let's hear it. Let's go.
And I'm quite happy for it to be stomped all over for this. But I interpret that side of things as a lack of confidence in what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need to ask for money. That means you don't believe that you're going to get a return.
Yeah.
You know, if you believed, I mean, if you just have zero cash, then fair enough. But if you really believe in what you're doing, you should feel confident to invest in what you're doing.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. That's exactly what I do. Yeah. I probably spend, like, a lot of my own money goes towards the band. And that's kind of what I have to do. And yeah, I might be living pretty poor, but I mean, I need this to work out. So,
but a large part of that is that, and I can speak to this from my own experience, is that if you work really hard, and it sounds like you've got a very entrepreneurial mind, which is really great.
Thank you.
Because that's really much more important than how fast you can play.
Yeah.
You know, but if you work hard, you know, you're not looking for a shortcut, and you think both creatively and in a business sense, you may not end up exactly where you plan to get to, but you'll end up somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I definitely had great ambitions to be a big rock star and whatever, didn't get there. But, you know, I have been a full-time musician for 20 years, you know what I mean? So I'm not doing everything wrong. You know what I mean?
You're doing better than most people.
And what you just said, like, this has to work. Fuck yeah. I know that feeling. Because when I started off, I was completely broke.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I mean, I'm not saying I was more broke than what where you are, but I definitely, I mean, my food budget at one point was $14 a week. You know?
Oh, man. You know what? Funnily enough, I got sanitarium. Sanitarium, I messaged them.
Why are you pointing down there?
Because I got my phone.
Oh, right.
I'm just pointing at my phone.
I thought they were sanitarium.
Yeah, I brought my Weet-Bix stash with me. I can't go anywhere. I got labeled officially the Weet-Bix king because I ate Weet-Bix every day for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Because I was an apprentice and I was super broke and I wanted to like... I mean, I'm talking like no milk in my in my coffees. Yep. No, nothing but water with my wheat. It was a horrible way to live.
I bought this chunky soup, these tall cans of chunky soup, and I'd be able to have half a can plus some rice for dinner.
Yep.
So two of these cans, which were like $2.50 each at the time, that was like four nights of dinner.
Oh, yeah.
I think I had toast for breakfast, and I realized the cheapest way to eat lunch was to not eat lunch.
Yeah.
So I just didn't eat lunch. And I can't remember the other 2 days. But yeah, I got it. I mean, this is obviously a very different time in terms of how much food costs. Because one of those cans of soup now probably be like $4
or something, yeah.
But I often do, like, back on the comparing generations thing, like there's just more to pay for now.
Yeah.
Because then we didn't have cell phones. Like that was just...
Or streaming. You know what I think the biggest killer is streaming services.
Well, we didn't even need to pay for the internet because it wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah.
So what did I pay for? Like the phone bill, the power bill, some food?
Dial-up.
No.
Yeah,
we didn't have the internet.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
No, I'm older. I look incredibly young.
Nah, fair.
No, this was like 98 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was right as that stuff was coming in. But, well, I didn't have the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I was born in 99, so I've always,
You were born the moment that I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. So, yeah, I mean, I guess you've just got a lot more expenses being a young person these days.
I mean, I don't really count my... If I wanted to save, if my mind was like, yeah, I want to make money, I'd be working like a night shift.
Yeah.
Like, I would have the worst job. I would have the worst... life to work experience,
right?
Ratio, whatever.
And
I wouldn't be gigging. I'd be miserable. I would be living in some flat that cost me like $100 a week. That's got black mold all over it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have any of my music insurance because I would have sold them. Right. I would have been. Like, I would rather be happy and poor than rich and miserable.
Absolutely. Yeah. When did you have that epiphany, or did that?
I've always had it.
Right.
I think I've always lived a pretty like.
Hillbilly life?
Yeah. I mean, I to be honest, I did splash out on expensive gear when I first got my job.
Right.
Because I was like a real gear. But like now, maybe in the last 4 years, I'm like, I'll make do.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what I mean?
No, I think it's a quite a wise thing to think about because so many people are just automatically thrown into the mindset of must succeed in, you know, certain ways.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, of course, they chase the money and they chase the job and they chase all of those typical things. And then they get to you know, midlife, and they go, oh shit, I haven't done anything that I'm actually proud of.
That's what I was scared of, man.
Yeah.
I got to like 23 and I'm like, I need to, I haven't even gigged before. I need a gig. Right. I need a, and so I just went, I just jumped into the deep end and just,
yeah.
I think that's a big part of why my band, like the Boondocks, is caught, like, not so much, but we've got good traction in yeah. such a small amount of time.
Right.
Kind of just like, we've made a storm, like kicked shit up.
How have you done that though? Like, how, because there's obviously a buzz out there now about you guys.
Yeah.
I guess you've been playing loads of shows, but how have you sort of, you know, I mean, it's really hard to launch a band in this country.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like I've been accused of it a couple of times. A lot of people think I'm a nepo baby.
Which, what does that mean?
Nepotism. It's okay. Like the idea that people get, I honestly get messages like every week. People being like, you're a nepo baby. Well, I'm not saying that, but
random people message you.
Nah, other bands. A lot of bands. Yeah, you'll get bands that will be like, you know, like they won't just message you. They might say it in person. They might say something.
And they're taking a shot. Like, this
they'll take shots at you because we've been on The Rock twice with our two songs.
So this is Tall Poppy Syndrome.
I guess so. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that, especially since we released our first song. So we've been on The Rock twice, and that looks really like, oh, how did you get on? The most common one is, not maybe directly, but I think it's the incentive is like, how did you get on The Rock? You must know people. Like, who do you know to get on The Rock? And it's like, man, I just worked with a producer. I do what every other person does. You have to talk to like Ricardo Ball or like all those people. And yeah, but when I released Black Taxi, I had The Rock messaging me saying, hey, when are you guys releasing a song?
Because
so it's like, I'm not like knocking anyone like or anything, but I mean, I put a lot of work into it, and I think people, maybe it is Tall Poppy Syndrome, they'll see you networking, and they're like, oh man, he's a... I mean, yeah, networking's a big part of it. I mean, that's why you do things like, I come on podcasts, and I probably spend, like, do my, like, 10 hours a day job.
Right.
And then I'll spend the next 2 hours sending emails every night. Yeah. And sort of
I can actually sort of empathize with both sides of that, honestly.
Same. Like, you know, I don't want to sound like a dick, but...
No, you don't sound like a dick, but I mean, I've thought about the Tall Poppy thing quite a lot. I've obviously experienced it too. And I think there is a weird attitude that prevails in this country.
It's jealousy, man.
It's totally jealousy. But I think it's also because there's bugger all going on.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for most people to get anywhere. And I think, it. You know, a lot of people are getting good producers and talking to the right people and not getting on The Rock.
Yeah.
And there is a kind of like, well, how the fuck did he get on The Rock?
I got told my song was punishing the other day.
Punishing?
They're like, I heard your song on the radio, punishing. I was like, thanks, man. You don't really have to like it if you don't want to. But yeah. Like, I don't let it affect me, but it kind of sucks because I always try. So my thing is I want to support everyone as much as I can because if I support them, like, I guess they will like me and I won't build a bad reputation.
Of course, yeah. And let me just be clear about what I mean. I'm not for a second validating that attitude. I'm just saying I can understand where it comes from.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I'm used to people doing the Tall Poppy scene, the Tall Poppy thing behind your back.
Yeah.
I'm not used to them saying it straight to your face.
It's usually when they're drunk or be like on like a social media post, they might leave a comment. I mean, I'm a pretty sensitive guy, so I'll read something and I'll be like, man, that sucks. I really like you.
right.
And it sucks that you're, I like pretty much, I would say I'm like pretty much every band. But,
well, I think all artists are sensitive like that,
man,
especially about their work.
Yeah, and like I think the thing about music is they put so much of themselves into it. You pour your like soul into music,
right?
And when it doesn't work out, you're like, why does no one care about this?
But you know what is? I've thought about this a bit recently because some of the stuff that I've done in the past, and there have been criticisms about it, and I think deep down it's hurt more because I kind of know that they might be right.
Yeah,
like that comment they're making is like, oh crap, they're kind of right.
Yeah,
but it feels different when I trust my instinct and I trust my artistic ideas and see something through. The thing that we're getting mixed at the moment, I like so much, I couldn't give less of a fuck what anyone thinks.
Yeah,
and that's a really nice feeling.
Yeah,
you know, if someone says your songs are rubbish, I was like, I know you're wrong, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you know, and I feel like that's a nice way to try and bulletproof yourself from that stuff is just to make sure that what you put out is the best that you can do.
Yeah, exactly, and that is the like that's why I'm saying, working with people that people need to keep a good attitude. If you're in a band, the worst thing you can do for your band to not succeed is talk shit about other bands.
That's right,
and be mean to people.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've not once said to anyone that. The rubbish or anything.
The song sucks or whatever.
Yeah, and then people say it to you. It's like, it's probably your negative attitude and the way you talk to other people was probably what's hindering your band the most. Because it's not that your songs aren't bad, but when people talk to you and then you say, oh, your song was rubbish or like... Yeah.
I mean, and we also have always struggled to have a supportive community here. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, it's just like one of those life principles. If we all just treated each other better, then everything would be better.
Yeah, honestly. It's so
quite
strange.
It's quite simple.
Yeah,
you know?
Honestly.
I always think about, imagine how much money we could save in insurance if people just stopped fucking stealing your shit. You know what I mean? all the people that go out there and think it's their fucking right to go and fuck someone else's life up.
Yeah.
And then they're the ones paying for it too.
Yeah.
Because everything gets more expensive for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, like if we just all, you know, treated each other the way we'd want to be treated, everything would work better.
that is actually what you just said. Treat everyone how you want to be treated is exactly what I try to do. That is my entire, like, in the music industry, that is my motto to live by.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get the balance right because you also have to be tough and you do come up against cowboys and con artists and things like that.
Yeah.
But that still doesn't mean that you have to stoop to their level.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good to be able to be assertive enough to say, no, that's not okay. But it's also good to be able to not take that out on someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I think New Zealand, like, I mean, I actually think that New Zealand, majority wise, is pretty supportive. I think it's I think it's the loudmouth minority that ruins it.
True.
Ruins that. I think when I hang out with people, like the bands that I like the most, there's a band called Pink Plates. They're one of my favorite bands to go and watch.
Yep.
They're an amazing band. And I'm friends with all of them, but I like them as a band as well, not just because they're my mates, but because I really like the music. They're actually a big influence on my band.
Great, yeah.
And
that also might be a generational thing, you know.
Well, maybe.
Because I now that you say that, I'm sort of remembering that. I don't know if I'm actually remembering this correctly, but I remember when I was sort of roughly in my early 20s, just everyone was just a dick.
Yeah.
And and now it seems like the younger generations are actually really supportive. So that actually it all adds up. Yeah. Maybe I'm complaining about something that's already been fixed.
I mean, I think it's literally just the minority.
Yeah.
And people are a lot nicer to us now than they were.
Yeah.
And I think it probably has something to do with that we're getting traction. Like, I think that's another thing is people are like, oh, let's, can we do shows with you? Like, stuff like that. But what I was saying before is Pink Plate, super supportive. I talk to them. If I ever have, like, need to whinge about something, I'll call up one of the Pink Plates boys and be like, oh, you know, I actually call them up after someone made a comment to me once and they're just like, don't worry about it. Like, they're just angry.
Yep.
And it's not even angry at you. Like, they're just angry about their own,
that's
their
it.
Own shit.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
But like bands like Silk Road, super nice dudes.
Yep.
Animal Head, really nice dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Or pretty much every band out there is really nice. It's maybe just one dude and one band that's a douche.
And is it usually on social media or is that actually usually in person that these things
happen? I think for me, most of the time it's in person.
Right, interesting.
But
because I always talk about it on the podcast, I'm not really a social media person.
Nah, fair.
But every time I look at Facebook especially, I just come away feeling awful.
Yeah.
Happened to me last night. I just went on there for a minute and I saw someone made a snarky comment on someone else's post and in the someone I know really well and that person kind of pushed back on them. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went back and forth and I was just reading this and then I just thought, oh, now I just feel really shit.
Yeah.
Why did I look at that?
That is social media to a T though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe you're right about it being a generational thing. I think our generation is pretty supportive.
Yeah.
And so we don't really get that sort of bickering on social media, but when we don't get on social media, we just get in person a lot of the
time.
Right,
yeah.
Because it looks really bad on your reputation if you start
That's
being...
what I always think. Like, because it's often people in the music industry doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And like, are you not aware of the fact that you just spent the last 3 years adding everyone from the music industry and now you're saying this stupid shit and everyone's seeing it?
There's a lot of people like that. Whenever an event happens, like a worldwide event, like it happened with COVID.
Right.
It's happened with this Israel-Palestine war.
Absolutely.
Like,
everyone's gone nuts over it.
Yeah. Like everyone, if you're talking about it, it's like, I think it's just, if someone makes a post and they support it, like I don't want to even comment on it because I don't want to get myself in trouble.
don't want to wade into it.
Yeah, yeah, but like, you know, if you make your political, if you make your ideology,
yeah,
like loud, mm-hmm. people are gonna look at that, and if they don't agree with you, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna right. be like, okay, the, you know, and so.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how to explain it past that.
I mean, I have that kind of danger always at my feet doing the podcast.
Yeah.
Because I could very easily stitch myself up.
Yeah.
And I've definitely talked about some hot issues along the way.
Yeah.
My policy, and hopefully it's working, my policy is only say something for sure if you really know it's true.
Yeah,
and exactly. if you don't know it's true, then just be humble about it, you know?
Yeah.
So in terms of, I'd be quite not saying we should go there, but I'd be quite happy to talk about the Israel Gaza Strip situation, because I'll put my hand up and say I don't really know that much about it.
I don't think a lot of people do.
No,
it's a really complicated. I'm a really big nerd on my war history.
Right. Okay.
And so it's something that really I actually
you do know a bit about it.
Well, I don't know heaps about it. It's even yeah. confusing for me. But there's heaps of things like this war goes back a long time.
Right.
And it's like a snowball effect from the First World War.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
Right.
Like the Ottoman Empire was a massive empire that ruled in that region.
Huge.
For like, it's like, I think it was the longest lasting empire of all time, pretty much.
Is that right?
Yeah, the Ottoman Empire is ancient.
Wow.
And it was, God, I hope I'm speaking facts here. Just going off memory, but like it was like a big empire.
Yeah.
Big deal back in the day, and it just fell after World War One. It just collapsed.
Right.
And then we've got all these issues that are happening in places like the Middle East. And
but it's also people trying to oversimplify it.
Yes.
You know, it's like people are trying to turn everything into a Marvel film, you know, like the good guys and the bad guys.
Captain America's not going to turn off.
Hey? And in this sort of situation at the moment, it's just not as simple as that.
No, it's pretty crap regardless which angle you...
No matter how you look at it, that's right.
That's just shit.
Yeah. Speaking of angsty things, where do you get your angst from?
My angst?
Yeah, because what I like... Well, what I don't like about some rock bands is that it feels like it's more of an act.
Yeah.
I'm acting angry because that's our job in this rock band.
You think I'm genuinely? I am.
Well, if you're either genuine or you're really good at acting.
Yeah, thank you. No, I am pretty angry.
I am pretty angry.
I'm really angry. Nah, I think a lot of it, like, I'm a really anxious person a lot of the time. I'm not anymore, but before being in this band, I was... This is going to get deep, guys. I was just not very good at managing my like mental health.
Right.
And I think being in this band was like a really big thing for me to get out of all these valleys that I'd go into.
Right.
Like, especially like really deep valleys that I'd get into. And so being in this band always gives me something to look forward to. It makes me feel like I'm achieving something. It's like the equivalent of like a gym bro going to a gym. Like there's stories usually like I really struggled with my body image. So I went to the gym and now I'm like the most jacked man on the planet, but I still feel too small.
Right.
And that's like, you know what I mean? Like,
Or like Arnold who got massive, but always felt insecure about his thighs. Yeah,
honestly.
No, his calves, his calf muscles. Yeah.
Hey, the dudes. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's okay to like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but you know what I mean? Like being in a band, it just makes me feel like I'm doing something and it makes me feel like I'm a part of something bigger than just myself.
And what about the expression side of it? Writing lyrics and also just the feeling of being on the mic.
Yeah, so I always struggled with confidence with vocals. Brandon, thank fuck I have Brandon because he's in another band called Channeled and he's really experienced with gigging before we started the band. I never gigged before except for maybe one or two small, really small ones.
Right.
With other bands. And Smoke Free Rockquest doing like one song. And doing this band, I just was like, I want to just do it. Like, I'm not going to beat around the bush. I just want to do it. for my lyrics, I think a lot of the songs are written from frustration. Like, we got a song that's coming out on AP that is about the living crisis, which I am very frustrated with. Yep. And a lot of the songs are like dealing with anxiety, and I've got tics, which is like it's not something I really like to tell a whole lot of people, but having like Tourette's is like a really weird thing to experience because I don't know anyone else with it.
Right. Although it's not. I mean, it's quite common, right?
I don't know if it is that common. I don't know anyone who actually has it personally. It might be common.
It's pretty well known, though.
I think, like there's a big thing. Like, people have it really bad. I don't have it as bad as, like, Uncle Tex does.
Yeah.
But I don't go out there. It's not like part of my marketing strategy. Like, yeah, I'm a singer of a band and right. I've got tics. You know what I mean?
It's but just... when you, because you messaged me, what, half an hour before you got here yeah. And said, by the way, I've got Tourette's.
Yeah.
And which is obviously, I don't mind, but I just thought that must be a pain in the ass to have to kind of preempt some things with that.
Yeah. I mean, not really. I think everyone's always super supportive of it.
Right.
When I worked with Scott Seabright, I was like, yeah, I have tics. I might make weird noises. And yeah. I can suppress it. You can actually suppress them. You might have noticed that I've done a lot of motor tics today.
Right.
Instead
what,
of
what are motor tics?
Motor tics are like when I do this, like nodding my head or blink really hard and just stuff right. like that. Those are motor tics. And coughing is kind of like a motor tic. But then you get vocal tics, which I do, which are like, whoop, I do that a lot.
Okay, yeah.
Or I'll like whistle or I'll say something. Just heaps of stuff like that.
And how do you how can you suppress it? Obviously it's involuntary, so
yeah, it's you can suppress them, it just makes it worse later.
Oh really?
Yeah,
so it sort of builds up.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's wicked, eh?
It's like you're like, I'm stoked.
I mean, no one really cares. People used to give me a hard time in high school a little right. bit, because like it got worse over time, but yeah. It's kind of stopped. It's definitely like a hormonal thing. Most people get it during like puberty.
Is that right?
Yeah, a lot of people do.
When did you first notice it?
I started noticing it when I was 13, and it started off as a head nod and started into like blinking and like repeating words all the time. But I think it just, I just don't care about it. I was very in the closet about it around my parents and family, and I don't really talk to them about it.
Right.
Because it's like my dad, but it's just not something that's brought up, because it's nothing that. It's kind of like an awkward thing.
But wouldn't they have been part of helping you diagnose it?
My dad was, yeah.
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 So wouldn't that mean you would talk about it with
them? Not real. It was, I don't know, I guess I have old family, so like my brother's pretty supportive about it, but it's not something I just like, it's not something I really want people to like rave about or anything.
Sure.
It's just like a part of who I am. And all my friends that know me might have made things at first, and it does bother me if they make fun of me for it, because I can't help it.
Exactly.
And a lot of the time I just want to be able to have it, like be able to do it without being judged.
Right.
And I mean it's a lot better to have this than to have to live with like something horrific, like
yes, of course,
know, yeah, it's just a part of who I am.
Yeah, there could always be something worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the things that I staunchly kind of do is talk openly about things in terms of not only on the podcast views about the world and industry and whatever, but also I talk pretty openly about some of the struggles as well.
Yeah.
Some of my struggles, because
that's a big part of who I am as well.
Yeah. And I think that it is only good.
Yeah.
The only thing that comes from it is good, because these things are made worse if they're kept under wraps.
Yeah.
And other people out there who are struggling with either the same thing or just something that they can relate to will automatically just feel less alone and a bit, you know, it feels
more understood.
It feels different if you go, well, I'm going through this thing, but then again, so are other people as well. So it's not just me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Which is why I think, I mean, it's good that you're talking about it anyway. And and maybe it's even something they could lean into. Because for me, it's like it's kind of like a punk rock thing for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of like my version of fuck you.
You like know? Being something that, like doing the supportive thing.
Well, kind of just, I mean, the world is often trying to get you to get into line and fit a certain mold.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of mental health issues blow up, because you've got people who don't feel that way. You know what I mean? But they're expected to get into line. And you're fuck off. You know, we're actually most of us have mental health issues.
Like all of us, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know a single person who's ever been like, yeah, my whole life's been amazing.
Yeah. Like, I know people like that, and they're wankers.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm usually very open, especially with my friend. I don't let it. The only way I really talk about it is in my songs.
Yeah.
But I write songs, and people can interpret however they want, but right. my songs all have meanings. They're just maybe sometimes they're not direct or something, but sometimes it might even not even be subtle at all, but that's fine.
Yeah.
And so I don't really want it to portray myself as that in my songs at this point, but in the band's image at this point, because we're kind of just like a fun rock band.
Yeah, right.
But...
and I'm not suggesting that you should be an advocate or anything, but I think that there are bands out there who are just fun, and they like nothing more than fun.
Oh,
and,
no,
and they, and
yeah.
they come across as basically shallow.
Yeah, you know, I definitely like, I go out of my way to make posts about like,
yeah,
like I'm super about like mental health support, right. massively about it.
Yeah.
I had a really close friend of mine pass away a few years ago.
Right.
He was my cousin. His name's Dylan. Yeah. And he was like, that was probably like a massive part of my life was losing someone I was super close with to suicide.
Right.
And so my friend and cousin, Dylan, I used to hang out with him all the time. Mm. I was one of the last people he called.
Yeah.
Horrific time for me. I was 19. And so having to deal with that at a young age, really, I mean, I was always an advocate for it beforehand, but that was like a whole nother level.
Absolutely.
And yeah, ever since then, I mean, my family's always been pretty, especially my dad. My right. dad's super supportive of that sort of stuff. And I think, where am I going with this? I think I've always been a big supporter of things like mental health, big, big part, especially suicide awareness.
Yeah.
Always try to do something. I'm trying to do a song at the moment with Scott, and me and Brandon have written a song.
Hmm.
And we kind of want to do some kind of fundraising thing for mental health if we can. It's just kind of hard to figure out which way to do it is appropriate.
Yeah.
If you get what I mean.
And also, if you get the first bit done, where do you send the money?
Yeah, right. there's that. Yeah. I take very strong stances on mental health, like big supporter of it. And same thing with like just inappropriate behavior that is like, I have big anti like domestic violence.
Yep.
Obviously, as just like, yeah, everybody should.
Yep.
I'm massively against domestic violence, massively against, I'm really about, like safety of like women at venues and I mean just everywhere in general, but that's like a really strong stance I take.
Yep.
I won't support bands who have accusations against them or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I also take strong stances about just like, just I want people to feel good, you know?
Right.
It's not even like a matter of like, yeah, I'm taking a really strong time. I'm just, it's just be a good person, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Like, yeah, you're not talking about being Barney the Dinosaur.
No.
Yeah, you know, you're, I mean, it's just an interesting development that's been happening in a really good way. I mean, there are definitely downsides to some of the ways that some of this has been handled with some of the woke stuff and whatever. But,
yeah.
But I mean, especially in our country, historically, men for especially have been taught that they can't communicate or reveal emotions or anything like that.
Yeah.
Bottling up was part of our culture, that kind of staunch rugby head nonsense.
Don't be a pussy.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea that people are starting to talk more openly, I mean, this has been going on for quite a long time now, but people have been talking more openly about, you know, things like depression and stuff like that. I mean, things like wanting people to feel safe and not be on the victim of any kind of violence, let alone domestic violence. I mean, this should be obvious.
Right? But people still do it.
I know.
And people still let it slide. And it's weird, man. Like, being a like massive, it's not that hard. And it's not risky to take those positions on those things. You're not taking a risk by being like, yeah, I hate people who beat their girlfriends. It's like, oh no, you're going to lose five. If you have five followers that agree with beating your missus, like, you don't want those people following you anyway.
Exactly.
Like, who are you losing? Just some fucking losers? You know what I mean?
What's the downside? I guess it's harder when whatever the topic is more complicated and, you know, like the war example.
Yeah.
That's much more complicated, but there is no complication about whether a guy should put his hands on a girl. You know, there's no complication about the other way around too. You know, one thing that weird that happened to me is, I was playing this show in down south. I think it was about a week or two after the whole Me Too thing blew up.
Yeah,
which was such an interesting thing to witness. From my point of view, I was aware that these things happened, but I didn't know it happened that much.
Yeah,
and I didn't know it happened to that extent.
It happens a lot, for sure.
Yeah, I knew that there were the odd extreme cases, but I didn't know it was like built in like that.
Yeah,
and it was just completely shocking, obviously. But what's weird, I was playing this gig like not a week or two after it started, and now that's the whole conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm on stage, and in the show I'm in, they said, we've put this platform here at the front, So when you go to do something like a solo or something, you can stand up on the platform and we'll hit you with the lights.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. Okay. So first solo, or whatever, at some point I play a solo, stand up on the platform, and I'm, then the lights hit me and I'm concentrating on what I'm doing and I feel these hands go up my leg.
Yeah.
And I, exactly. That's what I thought. And they didn't stop. And I then, okay, so I stood off the platform and I thought maybe it was just a one-off thing. Stood back up there and a couple songs later, happened again, kept happening again.
Gross.
And one of the guys in the crew, actually, who was a complete twat, he thought it'd be funny to then bring that person backstage afterwards.
Oh, yuck.
And I was in a situation where I didn't feel like I could tell her to bugger off, you know, because I was playing in their show and she was a paying audience. And in hindsight, I should have told her to go fuck herself.
It was just, it was context, right? Like, at the time, it was just like, you know, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I understand.
And I'm in a situation where I could easily have handled her if I had needed to, but I wasn't that going to do that sort of thing. And I just couldn't get over the, like, have you not been reading the news?
I think, it's definitely like sometimes it was just, sometimes it can just feel like that. I've been, I've been touched unwantedly. Is that the right word?
Yep.
Quite a lot, surprisingly.
You mean on stage or just in life?
I've been at like venues, played a show, got off stage, and I had like people like grab my ass,
right,
which is not very nice.
Yep,
and
feels like a double standard day. Like everyone's sometimes super conscious about women, but not so much about guys.
It does happen to women a lot more, but
obviously, obviously,
I can't help that I got a massive, sexy dump truck, and that they want to grope it all the time. But can they just like not grope it all the time?
A dump truck.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you call it, a dump truck.
It's like the worst thing you can call it.
And like it happens all the time. It's really gross.
Yeah.
And like I was at another show where I've been like, I've had like someone who was in a position of power do that to me.
Oh god.
And that was pretty yuck. And like it does happen. And it's gross that it happens, and it happens to women a lot more.
For sure, but it shouldn't happen to guys either.
Shouldn't happen to anybody.
Yeah,
at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be addressed. I definitely I hate going to like K Road and stuff and seeing that shit all the time happening to women.
Yeah,
but it's the same shit with like. It still happens to guys. It's just not in the same sense. But
it's also where people who witness it need to say something, you know?
Yeah.
And those that crew member who thought it was funny needs to fucking go and review his life.
Yeah. Like, leave, right?
Yeah.
So many people fucking... when I was at a venue the other day, and I nearly got into a fight with like, two dudes because... I didn't want to get into a fight.
Yeah,
I'm not like a big guy or anything, but
except for the dump truck,
the big dump the big truck, dump truck. Yeah. Death by snooze.
Given a good arsing.
he started like fucking. He grabbed this woman who was just walking past, this lady, this girl who was working, and just grabbed her, started swinging her around. I didn't really. You know, it's really weird when you're in those situations because you want to react, but you don't know how to react, and you don't react fast enough, and you think back, and like, but you just don't know. Like, I thought they might have known each other.
Yeah.
I was going through all this shit in my head.
Right.
And then one of the bar staff I know quite well came up and was, like, talking to this guy who was with his mate and this other person. And she was like, I just want to have a talk with you. And the mate pipes up and starts, like, getting, like, really loud at her, and I think he shoves her or something.
Right.
And I'm like... fuck this guy. I stand up because I'm like, am I the only dude watching this? And I'm not a confident person, but I'm going to stand up now and talk to this person.
Yep.
I get really anxious. I roll up my sleeves. This guy thinks I'm trying to start a fight. I'm like, yo, she's telling you to fuck off. You better fuck off. Yep. Roll up my sleeves out of anxiousness. He's like, you want a fucking fight? And it's like 200-pound fucking friend just sitting there just yelling at me. And meanwhile, there's just like, this argument happening. I guess testosterone kicks in and I start getting angry.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, I'm by myself in this situation. And yeah, I mean, there's always going to be losers who do that shit, but those losers are losers and they'll just fucking be banished to being nobodies for the rest of their life.
I had a thing like that happen at a show about a year ago where I same thing. I was like, do they know each other? And then after a while, I was like, I don't think they know each other.
Yeah.
And this guy was grabbing this girl. They were sort of, he was sort of trying to dance with her, but then he was like awkward kissing her, and I think at one point he even licked her, like licked her cheek. Exactly, you know. And then I could, I mean, she was clearly uncomfortable, and her friends were uncomfortable, and all the rest of it. What I did was I just went on the mic and I said, and I pointed at him, and I said, don't lick people, it's weird. And he was so embarrassed, he left the venue.
My mate recently in a band, he's got a girlfriend, and we were at this venue, and his band had played. He did the smoothest. This is a tip for anyone who has like a girlfriend. If you want a dude who's irritating her, but you don't want to start a fight, you don't want to start a scene, there's a really good way to do it. He just went and bought her a Coke and went up to her and he's like, oh, here's that drink you wanted. And the dude just looked at, I mean, my friend's the most jacked dude I've ever fucking seen too. Yeah. So it's just like Francis Ngannou sized dude handing his girlfriend a can of Coke, and the dude just looks at him and just walks away and leaves.
He's like, message received.
Yeah, yeah. Message received. That's all it needs to be. It doesn't need to be like, yo, you talking to my girlfriend, bitch, and then punch him. You don't have to resort to violence.
Because that's right. There are more complications to all this stuff. I mean, sometimes the guy's just a creep.
Yeah.
But sometimes they are actually trying to flirt and they just don't know how to.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like,
and it comes across as creepy.
It comes across as creepy. Again, it's not trying to justify anything, but it's just like they're actually not really coming from a bad place.
They just don't understand social cues.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so sometimes that's quite a nice way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You can tell when someone's like...
Maybe that's the first thing.
Yeah, right.
Do the first thing, and if he doesn't get the message, then roll up your sleeves.
Yeah, yeah, then roll up your sleeves. Out of anxiety. Yeah.
So change of tack for the last little bit. What would you say your guilty pleasure is in terms of music listening?
Oh man, I don't have any. I don't believe in guilty pleasures.
Interesting
man.
Answer. Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to be like a Belieber or, you know, something like
bro,
that.
Bro, I fuck with Bieber.
Oh really?
Yeah, hard. I love Justin Bieber.
Really?
Yeah.
I picked the right one.
Yeah, he's the fucking man. Dude, if you listen to that dude sing, like, he's an amazing musician. Yeah. Anyone who knocks him is has got half the ability he has.
Right, okay.
He's got more ability with his voice than most people have with their 20 instruments that they learned in their bedroom. Mm. You know what I mean?
I like your answer, though. Like, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. I actually really like that answer.
Yeah, it's true. Like,
because I remember being a teenager, being embarrassed to admit that I liked the stuff that I liked when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got a bit older. I'm like, wait a minute. The stuff I liked when I was a kid was fucking awesome.
Yeah, man.
It was like Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson. And it was like, there's nothing wrong with this music.
It's like, just like nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
I don't think you should just mold yourself into listening to one style of music,
right,
which is what every teenager does, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
I only listened to grunge and death metal in high school, but now I listen to a whole variety of stuff. Shoegaze is probably one of my favorite genres ever. That's not a guilty pleasure at all. But,
right.
I'd say my musical guilty pleasure would... It's not... I fuck with Nickelback too. I fuck with them. I'm saying, like, they're good. They're fine.
Well, I mean, the thing is that Nickelback are a band that people have decided to love to hate.
Yeah.
And they're no better or worse than most other rock bands in that corner, in that kind of pop rock lane. And I don't understand how people can hate Nickelback and then like another band that sounds
Puddle
the
Mud,
same.
Puddle of Mud.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, what are you talking about? Are you actually listening to the music?
You don't have to like music. Music's subjective. You just don't have to have like a guilty... You don't have to feel bad for liking something.
Right. Yes, exactly.
It's like you don't have to be hiding away your feelings towards a genre of music that you like.
What about TV shows?
TV shows? Oh, nah. I don't really watch too much TV.
Or movies.
I love movies, man. Yeah. But, I mean, I hate Marvel movies.
Right, okay.
I have a big hate Marvel movies. But that's
interesting, because you're the generation that's supposed to like them.
I don't know. I think it's the generation between... I think it's more your generation, honestly.
Really? Yeah, I don't know. I've never even watched them.
I think it's maybe, like, no, I think it's the generation after you. People who are like, between, I mean, I was born in the late 90s.
Right.
So probably people who were more born in the 90s who really like that.
No, because my generation had way better superheroes.
We had
the original Incredible Hulk, which was
He-Man.
A 70s show. He-Man. Yeah. originals, because when I was a kid, there were so many repeats on TV.
Yeah.
That even though, like, shows from the 70s were part of my childhood. So the original Incredible Hulk, I thought, was far superior to any Incredible Hulk movie now. Get a big guy and paint him green and make it sad. That's how you do it, you know?
Yeah.
And the greatest flying superhero was Greatest American Hero. Without question. Have you heard of this guy?
I have.
Yeah.
I'm not super familiar with him, but I have heard of the...
Well, it's a brilliant premise. Basically, this average dude meets aliens.
Yeah.
They give him a suit, and he never figures out how to use it.
Oh, cool.
So every time he flies, he's going, ah, like this, and crashes into billboards.
I remember some of those. My brother had these comic books, like the Phantom.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I never really got into superheroes. I was kind of into... I liked Star Wars. Yep. I liked Batman and Spider-Man a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're superheroes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're superheroes. I don't
even
really like,
I know that.
I don't know. I don't like Superman. I thought he was too good at everything.
Superman's an idiot.
Yeah, he had too much.
And he's also a goody two-shoes.
Yeah. One of my favorite like movies as a kid was a movie called The Iron Giant.
The
Iron Giant.
Don't think I've heard of it.
That movie is a cartoon-styled animated movie.
Yeah.
It came out in 1998, I think. And it's based on an old book. And the books were super, like, hippie-influenced. Right. Like, but basically, the premise of it is, what if a gun had a soul? And it's about this robot. This robot who's, like, 100 feet tall.
Right.
A million tons. Crash lands on Earth and forgets his existence as what he did before.
Right.
But at the end of the movie, when he gets angry, he has a Hulk thing. He turns into a, like, fucking killing machine.
Right.
And it's just a really sad story about a robot who always puts others first before himself.
Right, yeah.
And ends up saving everyone through the sacrifice of himself.
Yeah.
And it's got a really bittersweet ending where he didn't actually die, if you haven't watched it.
Bittersweet when he doesn't die.
He can build himself back together.
Oh, I see.
But it's like the nicest story ever. And it actually failed in the movies. It didn't make its money back, but I want to say it's a guilty pleasure, but that's one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to judge. I come from a time where my biggest heroes in the 80s were MacGyver.
Oh, yeah.
And
Knight Rider.
I was just about to say Knight Rider.
$1 Million Man.
Well, yeah, that's going back.
Yeah.
But I actually never saw that because I think that's 60s maybe.
I watched that shit all the time as a kid because like all my brothers older, I grew up on VCRs, even like the 2000s.
Yeah. Just
always watching like VCR movies and stuff.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, like... I love Knight Rider and the $6 Million Man. I thought the $6 Million Man was the coolest thing idea.
Knight Rider is probably my all-time favorite TV show.
I think.
And that opening scene
with
the sepia desert and the car coming towards you, that still gives me goosebumps.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Knight Rider was sick.
Yeah.
I love all that stuff. I really like 80s horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my favorite movie ever is probably... One of my favorite movies ever is The Fly.
Oh, right.
The 80s one. Best movie ever.
Is that the 80s? I think that might be the 90s.
No, I think that's 80s, man.
Let's Google that.
Yeah. Is it Jeff Goldblum?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it might be right at the turn, actually. The Fly.
There was a 60s...
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah.
86.
I love that movie, man.
I didn't know that. I thought it was like
There was The Fly 2. The Fly 2 came out in the 90s.
That
was rubbish, but...
That wouldn't have been Goldblum, though, right?
No.
And
The Thing's a really good movie. Aliens.
Yep.
The second Alien movie.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing movie. I love all that stuff.
Did you get into the Schwarzenegger stuff?
Oh, dude. Arnold was my favorite actor as a kid. Predator, Commando, and like Kindergarten Cop, Terminator, all that.
Favorite. I just watched Commando again like a week ago.
It's an amazing movie.
Hilarious.
It's terrible. It's like the scene where he just like punches a dude through a wall and he's just taking on a whole military by himself. And in the end, he has to kill him with a Bowie knife.
Yeah. And the thing that occurred to me this time around, because I've probably seen that movie like 15 times over my life.
Yeah.
But the thing that really occurred to me is that Bennett, you know, the main bad guy he's up against, is supposed to be... you know, part of his old squad, right?
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be like the big challenger because he's part of the trained military crew and this is why he's like an equal match.
Yeah.
But he's just like flubby, rubbery, like overweight guy.
Australian dude.
Going, rah, 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 rah. And I'm like, just fucking punch him in the teeth. The whole movie would be over.
And still he kills the entire island, plants C4, takes a biplane over there.
Yeah, but why did they choose that guy as the bad guy?
Like, I don't know.
They could have chosen, they could have had Mr. T.
They should have had Stallone.
Yes, but the two were enemies at that point.
Well, they released it as like a thing for Rambo.
Yeah,
it was like it was like to take on Rambo
and
Commando. I love Commando though. Great movie.
Yeah. I also love Rambo.
Rambo's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like my 80s movies and I just like movies in general. Me and my friends have a spreadsheet and it's like 300 movies where we just rate them.
Nice.
And so, yeah, that's our thing, just watching movies all the time.
Well, we should tell everybody what's up with the Boondocks.
Yeah.
So you've got an EP coming up soon, is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah. We're recording our last song on Monday, so that should come out next year sometime.
Yep.
I don't know when this podcast is coming out. I guess this is kind of like an official announcement. So if you made it to the end, yeah, we
you made it to the end.
And we got a whole bunch of shows coming up. We probably more announce what we're doing when the EP comes out. But we're doing the Battle of the Bands. I don't know if we'll be out of it or we'll be in it.
Yep.
But maybe, hopefully, we will win it.
And where is a good, like, do you have a website or something that people can figure out where you're playing and stuff?
We have an Instagram. That's probably our best place to find us.
Yep.
The_boondocks_NZ.
Cool.
And you can find us on Spotify. There's about 100 other bands called the Boondocks. Just look up the Boondocks alone or Boondocks Back Taxi and it'll show up.
Well, great chatting. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was good.
If you find what we're doing useful and you like this podcast, please do like, share and subscribe and give us a review on iTunes.